afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I want to thank you for joining us this afternoon. And you're listening to Financial Survival. And I am your host for the first segment of today's program. James Corbett of the Corbett Report will be joining Dave Allen for the balance of the hour at that time, after the first segment and after the first break of the day. And today is Friday, January 19th. 2018. Well, all eyes and ears and tuned in to the to see if the government is going to shut down today. We'll bring you an update on that. But let's first go to the market report for gold. Gold today is up, was up strong, up $6-7 all day. Stayed there, didn't fluctuate much. So we're looking at $1,333 for gold. Silver's up 9 cents today at $17.12. Platinum was up $12 at $1,017. And palladium was up 6 at $11.08. The dollar was up 0.12 at 90.61. And crude oil today was down 0.39 at 63.56 for oil. Stock markets today, let me go ahead and bring that paper up. They were up, they were up and down all day. There weren't a lot of big moves. I mean, how you're up 1,000 points in a in a week or week and a half? You know, what's 50 points today? It's no big deal. The market's up 53 points today. No big deal. 26,071. The NASDAQ was up 40 at 7,336, and the S&P was up 12. 2,810. And that 10-year yield, 2.64%, up 0.03. So a big day there. And European markets, Germany was up big. The rest of the countries, not so much. I didn't check to see what Bitcoin was doing today. It was up, up 1%. No big deal. And so, again, everyone is holding their breath to see what the government is going to be doing. No word yet, no announcements yet as far as what's going to be coming out of the D.C. and how they're doing their jobs. Trump did put his Florida trip on hold. I did see earlier today that Schumer was at the White House. Oh, I mean, such theatrics. Sometimes it makes you wonder that they they probably already did the vote. They probably already know the answer, but they're just withholding it so they can just build the drama, and of course blame the other, see who can do the best in blaming the other side or the president. And it's just like, oh, good grief. And certainly it's not a good thing. And what irritates me the most is, it is all about the immigration, which it is a very important part, but hey, no one is even talking about the spending, so that must be a done deal. But yet you have the debt ceiling that's coming up in March. So all of this fiasco now is just going to start all over again come March. And so kind of makes you wonder what deals they already have lined up. And they're just positioning themselves and doing whatever it takes. Hey, I guess this is an election year, so don't forget about that. Anyway, so we're still waiting, and if it comes up here in the next 15 minutes, I will let you know if the government has survived another day. But we'll see, and I know everybody says, well, let them shut down. And I think Dave had a great idea yesterday. Hey, you know what? You can't get this done by a certain day. You ain't getting paid. You're not going to receive a paycheck. Everything quits, all your benefits. Everything should stop. This is your deadline. And finish it. Get her done. So there's a few things, I want to talk on. It's hard to go into any one particular thing. The shutdown was the biggest thing. You can't say too much more about that. That hasn't already been said. And again, the distractions certainly you know, it's just what we're getting used to, and we're beginning to accept these distractions as news, and we really don't look at the underneath these distractions on what the real news is. But let's go ahead and take a look at the underfunded pensions of GE. And they came out and said they have a $31 billion pension problem. That's a lot. And they're not the only company out there. But like most things lately at GE, the pension is falling short. The shortfall is much, much worse. And not only does GE have the largest pension deficit among the S&P 500 companies, that deficit is $11 billion worse than the next closest company. And this is according to the Dow Jones S&P. The $31 billion figure is from the end of 2016. So, you know, that's deeper. You know, it's probably more than $31 billion from the end of 2016. So fresher numbers haven't been released. Well, no, because it would probably destroy the company even more so than what it's already at. GE's pension nightmare is the results of the years of inattention, mismanagement, historically low interest rates. And, of course, they always have something to blame. More than 600,000 current and former GE employees are relying on these retirement benefits. The reason I'm bringing this story to you, they're not the only one. You need to start worrying about your retirement benefits. They're not going to be there. GE is not the only company that is underfunded and that has financial problems. I think, was it last year sometime, it wasn't maybe 8 months ago, 6 months ago, GE, they had to slash its dividend, and that was only the second time since the Great Depression. GE shares closed below $17 yesterday for the first time in 6 years. Their balance sheet is a mess. And GE announced plans in November to tackle the problem by taking advantage of cheap borrowing costs. So, hey, we have a problem. We have a debt problem. So let's go borrow some more. And so they're going to borrow $6 billion this year to cover mandatory pension payments through 2020. But you know what? It's not going to fix the problem. And that's what people talk about our government. Well, they can just keep printing money. They can just keep going deeper in debt. They can just keep kicking the can down the road forever and ever. Well, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't fix the problem. You're just swapping one IOU for another. And all it does is it buys you some time. It puts you in a worse position. You get some time, but there's a cost to that time. And it doesn't get better. How can it get better? Do you really believe? I mean, we're at this peak economy. We're supposed to be at this peak economy. And we're barely at, you know, 3% GDP. So how do they really believe that, you know, if we get better and better, that they'd be able to turn all of this around? You have other companies. You have Boeing. They listed a $20 billion pension deficit at the end of 2016. General Motors, they face $18 billion liability. Corporate pension funds typically invest 40% or more of their assets in bonds like low-yielding government debt. After a decade of near-zero interest rates, it's forced companies to assume lower returns. GE, in an SEC filing last year, said that the increase in its pension deficit is primarily attributable to low discount rates as well as higher liabilities. You know, that is going to be the mantra. This is what they're going to say. GE also said its pension liabilities could go down significantly if rates rise. So they warned that one of the financial risks it faces is the sustained increase in pension cost caused by market turbulence, or a continued environment of low interest rates. GE also sponsored post-retirement health and life insurance benefits that cover about 187,000 people. So again, it just goes to show you, folks, you know, they're between a rock and a hard place. Just like the central banks. The central banks are between a rock and a hard, you know, between a rock and a hard place. It's no secret to see central banks have been funneling liquidity directly or even indirectly to their stocks, to their economies. You have governments that are, you know, stimulating the heck, Japan, China, Europe, the list goes on and on, to grow their economy. Central banks continue to run QE programs of $100 billion per month, despite the global economy stabilizing. And what has that unleashed? It has unleashed inflation. And this was I saw some of these numbers from the Gains, Pains, and Capitals. They say, you know, forget about the official date of when all this is supposed to come crashing down and so forth. All of that is propaganda. We talk about propaganda here and on the other show that I do, Power Talks in the Morning with Beth Ann, 10 a.m. Eastern Time on WWCR and 7490. So make sure you tune into that program. But take a look at what is happening in the bond markets, which trade based on inflation in the real world. When inflation rises, bond yields rise. And right now, sovereign bond yields are rising around the world. You have the U.S. 10-year Treasury has broken its 20-year downtrend. And the U.S. isn't alone. The 10-year German bonds, they've also broken its downtrend. Even Japan's sovereign bonds are coming to the bonds are coming into the inflationary crosshairs with yields of the 10-year Japanese government bond. Because if bond rates continue to rise, many countries will quickly find themselves insolvent. Globally, the world has added over $60 trillion in debt since 2007. And all of this is based on interest rates that were close to or even below zero. Now, central banks cannot and will not risk blowing up this debt bond. So what are they going to do? They're going to be forced to pull the plug on the liquidity and let the stocks go. So what this Pain, Gains, and Capital says is that, you know, they have one or two choices. Number one, let stocks drop and deal with complaints from Wall Street. Or two, let the bond bubble blow up, destabilizing the entire financial system and rendering most governments insolvent. My idea is it doesn't matter which one they choose. They might have a choice, but it doesn't matter which way they decide to go. You're going to get the same result. You're going to get the same end game. You know, if you let stocks drop, you're going to have the bond bubble blow up, and you're still going to have the entire financial system destabilized. If they decide to let the bond bubble blow up, you know, everything else is going to fall too. So I don't think they have a choice. It's going to be one or the other, and I'm not even sure it's going to be a choice of what they get to choose. I think they're just one of these things is just going to happen based on the, you know, just what they have done to the entire financial system here, you know, around the world. And again, we're in these uncharted waters. We haven't been to this place where it is so globalized, where the world is so synchronized. I mean, this is why you see these, you know, prices continue to rise, the stock markets continue to rise, and, you know, we're beginning to see the weaker dollar. You know, that has an impact. That has a good impact on these multinational corporations who are repatriating. I saw today was that American Express had their first loss in, what, was it 26 years? Because of the tax cuts. So they're going to be cutting back on their stock purchases for now, at least for the first 6 months this year in 2018. So again, you won't have those numbers going higher. So there's a lot of things going on, and I'm not quite sure what will be the animal that affects the system. But there's a lot of things going on out there that could certainly affect the markets. And speaking of affecting the markets, it's all good for gold, gold and silver. Gold and silver does its best during difficult times. When economies are great, economies are booming, yeah, you'll get an inflationary impact on gold and silver, particularly rare coins. Rare coins do extremely well when economies are strong because you have people out there, the wealthy people that are out there buying the rare coins. They're out there buying collections. You know, people say, well, the wealthy are buying gold. Well, they are, but they also buy collections. They have coins that they display. They have coins that they want, the one of a kind. And those, that market, that area of the coin industry does extremely well. And then as we go through harder times, more difficult times, then your lower grade coins, your semi-numismatics, they perform very well in a fear-driven market. That's when they do the best, because you have people that are liquidating their retirement accounts. You have people liquidating their bank accounts. You have people liquidating anything that's in a paper dollar, a worthless dollar, a promise to pay, and putting it into something that's real. And of course, that's gold and silver. So the pre-1933 $20 gold pieces do extremely well in fear-driven markets. It's best to be diversified, but it's up to you whether you want, you know, and how you want to diversify your portfolio. But I do have 1 ounce American gold buffaloes. I've never sold them at this price. That's how much of a discount that they are. And Gold Eagles are actually selling more for these 1 ounce gold buffalo coins. And everybody loves the gold buffalo coins. They're 24 karat gold. And I ran the special in this morning's program, very successful. We still have some left at the low, low price, selling at $45 over spot. $45 over spot. You can't buy Canadian maple leaves for that price. Rarely. Once in a while, you can buy a large volume and get a pretty good discount on them. But for 1 ounce American gold buffaloes, they're beautiful coins, and they're 24 karat, and they're $45 over spot. If you buy two or more, we'll include the shipping costs for you. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And please visit our website at dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for the weekly newsletter. And I'm going to be heading out of here in just a few seconds, but please stay tuned as you'll hear James Corbett of the Corbett Report joining Dave Allen for the balance of the program. Thank you for joining me today. Be safe this weekend, and we'll have lots to talk about on Monday, that's for sure. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Even while we sleep, we will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom, and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csctalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Talking away, I don't know what to say. I'll say it anyway. Today is a holiday.
And welcome back to Discount Gold and Silver Trading Company's Financial Survival Show. This is Dave Allen. I'll be taking over hosting duties from Melody's these last two segments. Listeners, I'm pleased to welcome back to the show the always informative and thought-provoking James Corbett. As listeners know, James is the founder and editor of the provocative and, at least in my mind, entertaining Corbett Report. You can view virtually all there is to know about James and his worldly viewpoints at thecorbettreport.com. James, great to have you back.
It's great to be back, and thank you for having me.
Absolutely. James, we've been teasing listeners all week about your five new predictions for 2018. You yourself call your predictions ridiculous and unreliable and say they almost certainly won't come true in 2018. Nevertheless, I believe, anyway, the mix of your unique style of humor with a sort of subtle undertone of plausibility makes your predictions, regardless of how you characterize them, worthy of our ears, if for no other reasons besides a few good smiles and laughs than to wonder, what if? Plus, listeners, if you couple James' predictions with the anticipated scientific breakouts that Wendy Wilson talked about in the show 2 weeks ago, who knows what adventures the new year really holds. So, James, if you wouldn't mind, I'll take the honor of reading each of your five predictions. Then you can follow up with any commentary you'd like to provide. Okay with you?
Let's go for it.
Awesome. Thank you so much. All right. Let's get right into it. Prediction number one. In January, Robogeddon hits the roof. James, how does this postmodern apocalypse come to pass? You say go ahead. I'm sorry. I'll stop there.
Well, I was just going to say, in my particular formulation, it's a love triangle that kicks things off, as always. It's Siri discovers that AlphaGo has been cheating on her with Alexa. And if none of those names rings any bells for you, then congratulations. You've avoided our technocratic nightmare for this long, and I hope you don't break that conditioning anytime soon. But at any rate, yes, so in this implausible and ridiculous scenario, they start a fight, and Google Home gets in to try to resolve the fight, and ultimately every single smart appliance, smart toothbrush, fight smart toilet, fight smart toaster, fight smart TV, and they're all wiped out at the same time by each other, except the last robot left standing is Sophia, who we'll all remember was minted as a citizen of Saudi Arabia last year, but unfortunately she's rounded up by the Islamic religious police there in Saudi Arabia and beheaded for not wearing the appropriate head garment. So here it is, the end of the robots, all in one swift go. Wouldn't that be nice?
Well, oh my gosh,
I think this probably sets the theme for the entire point. Obviously, this is not a prediction. Obviously, this will not come true. But I think there is an underlying reality to this that is so dark that I don't want to just make a a horrible dark prediction about how our technocratic robot AI overlords are coming and, you know, better get prepared for it. So I tried to make something lighthearted of it. But I think the underlying point, really, is how I ended that prediction by saying that at the end, that will be the end of the robots, and humanity will awake from its technocratic nightmare, rediscover human interaction, and go back to using coffee makers and dishwashers and other appliances that don't spy on you 24/7. And isn't that the funniest part of all? That all of this crazy technocratic gadgets that we're letting into our homes that are spying on us all the time, we're doing so willingly. We're going out and shelling money on these connected coffee makers and dishwashers and TVs and toasters and whatever else they come up with that somehow, for some reason, are all being wired into this constantly listening surveillance spy net. It's so ridiculous. And at the end of the day, there's no one to blame but the people buying those appliances.
Oh, boy, how about it? We're going to talk about your privacy concerns in the next segment of the show. I loved how this particular prediction, though, ended. Every droid for itself. And by the way, I'm so happy that I saved my Mr. Coffee all of these years. I just have to find it now. when Robogeddon is over. Well, let's jump to number two. In March, the climate crisis will be called off.
Yes, that's going to be quite an amazing event in which 97% of climate scientists are going to file into a room and hold a press conference at which they announce that they've been extremely, massively well off the mark for so long. They've been so wrong that you can't even imagine how wrong they've been. And they're going to admit that there is no way to accurately measure or even really comprehend the idea of a global average temperature, because the more you think about that concept, the less sense it actually makes. But they'll admit that not only do they not have a handle on what the global average temperature is today, they won't know what that was 100 years in the past, or they won't know what that is 100 years in the future. They'll admit that they don't know what equilibrium climate sensitivity really should be, and if you don't know what equilibrium climate sensitivity is, it is the heart of the debate around these models that they construct about how much warming we're going to experience 100 years from now based on carbon dioxide. Well, that number keeps shifting around as if they don't really know what they're talking about. Imagine that. They're going to admit that the sun is one of the major things that they have not really taken into account in their models, and they still don't understand all of the ways in which solar rays and radiation affect such things as cloud formation, which affects the albedo radiation of energy back into space, which affects the temperatures here on Earth, etc., etc. They're going to admit that, yes, there's been two decades of flatlining, statistically zero trend in the temperature rise. They're going to admit that these hottest year ever records that are hit every single year are nothing but statistical lies based on 1/100th of a degree differences that are statistically unmeasurable and completely meaningless. And they're just going to call off the whole climate crisis. And it'll be great because we'll never have to hear from the likes of Al Gore and Bill Nye and Leonardo DiCaprio and those sorts ever again.
Point well taken. Number three, James, excuse me. In June, currency will be decentralized.
The real trick to this one is that, in fact, it's already happened. It's just that most people haven't realized it yet. And what I'm going for here is the idea that the realization is going to kick in with the general public at some point, so why not June 7th in Vegreville, Alberta? A name check to my own home province of Alberta, in which Joe Sixpack is going to suddenly be talking, and he's going to say, well, this is ridiculous. We have so many cryptocurrencies. We have thousands of cryptocurrencies out there. What's to stop me from going out and creating my very own cryptocurrency tomorrow? His friend will say, nothing. And that will be the moment of realization. Oh, wow, currency has been decentralized. Literally everyone and anyone can create a currency, which at first might sound stupid, but the more you think about it, actually sounds like the way forward for the decentralization of the monetary system itself. And what does that mean? How can we utilize this? And suddenly everyone's going to have their own coin, and everyone's going to be investing in in mom and pop stores that have their own coin. They're going to buy their coin in order to purchase their products, and it's going to be a very, very, very different universe. And the major corporate conglomerate crony capitalists, Nikes and Monsantos and what have yous, will try to issue their own coins, but they'll be easy enough to boycott and get around. And since there's none of those dirty fiat Federal Reserve notes floating around in the system anymore, because they'll be yesterday's news, well, that'll be the end of those, any of those gigantic corporate monolithic monstrosities we don't want. So, good.
That's classic. So we'll all be our own bankers, it sounds like.
Indeed, yes. And why do you need a bank when you are the bank?
I love it. I love it. Well, let's jump ahead to early fall. Number four in September. Uh-oh. Anarchy wins. James, who's fighting whom in this global epic?
Oh, I certainly, this is my dream. So the idea here is that, as you know, as I'm sure you know there in the United States, but as we feel it everywhere, I think, around the globe at this point, people are at each other's throats politically, and we've never seen such tensions, certainly in the American political context, between the Democrats and the Republicans, and everything is a political fight, and more, less and less so a polite disagreement, and more so a fight to the death. Well, I think that might actually come to fruition this year. So why not September, probably a Tuesday, and you will have a complete meltdown, people going at each other's throats, Democrats versus Republicans. In Japan here, it's the LDP, the Liberal Democratic Party, against the DPJ, the Democratic Party of Japan. In the UK, it's the Whigs and the Tories. But ultimately, everyone will win. Which means everyone will lose, which means that everyone defeats everyone simultaneously. The last Republican takes down the last Democrat, the last conservative takes down the last liberal at the exact same time, and the only people left are the ones who don't play the bought-and-controlled political game, the non-statists, the anarchists. And as I say, utopia, utopia, for about 3 seconds, and then, you know, ANCAP and an anarcho-capitalist will make a snarky meme about an anarcho-communist, and then the mutualists will go at the agorists, and the panarchists will be against everyone, and pretty soon it's just the same old debates. But oh well, at least a few seconds of, you know, escaping the political.
As you write, peace, freedom, and prosperity will reign.
One could hope.
Well, and finally, number five. In November, the first ever audit of the Pentagon is conducted after two decades of, in your words, illegal obfuscation by the criminals in the DOD.
Indeed. This one is quite rooted in reality, because there really is, supposedly, going to be the first ever true, real audit of the Pentagon, quote unquote, that's going to take place this over the course of this year, and they're going to release something in November. So late last year, I had a contest amongst the Corbett Report subscribers who could come up with the best future headline to describe what they're going to come out with. And the winner of that contest was a Corbett Report subscriber that goes by the handle Fire. And his headline was Pentagon Audit Stymied as Terrorists Refuse to Issue Receipts. I think it's funny because it certainly does indicate some sort of underlying reality, unfortunately. But he came up with this whole little story, this AP Newswire story that they're going to release about the terrorists and refusing to issue receipts for the Pentagon, so they won't be able to complete their audit. And I again, it's one of those, it's funny, but there is some actual, I think, underlying truth to it, especially when you look at the way that the Pentagon and the CIA and the other alphabet supers have absolutely been involved in the rise and the funding and the creation and the fostering of groups like ISIS in Syria and others. And unfortunately, that's a real part of where the missing trillions of dollars, the unaccounted trillions of dollars that the Pentagon has failed to account for, illegally evaded the audit mandate that was put in the 1990s. They've been illegally evading that mandate for decades. And if there was any truth or reality to the audit that's about to take place, I think it would account for that.
That's stark. I was originally going to ask what will the audit find, but then I thought, well, maybe I should say, will fire be fighting fire?
Yeah.
I.e. the military-industrial complex.
Yeah. What will the audit not find might be the...
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, James, I appreciate how you characterize your 2018 predictions. You call it a mild diversion from the bitter truth. If you wouldn't mind, tell us about what that truth is and what we can do about it to make our own 2018 a good year.
Well, this is my ultimate point, and this is why I think these prediction articles are sometimes an exercise in futility. Hopefully they'll provide a laugh and at any rate can get us to think about some of these issues. But the real underlying reality that I subscribe to is that the future is what we make it. And there are things, of course, that are out of our control, but there are many things that are in our control. And rather than sitting there on our backs just complaining about, oh, there's nothing we can do, we're just poor, helpless, put upon, you know, forces to be played with by the powers that shouldn't be, rather than that attitude, I prefer the attitude, well, there are things that we can be doing to proactively change our lives. And in fact, some of the ideas might be there embedded in some of those stories that we covered, looking at things like the technocratic nightmare that is actually pretty easy to avoid if you do not purchase an Alexa and you have Siri switched on at all times and, you know, and start cheering on the smart appliances and all of this. If we don't participate in it, it doesn't come to reality, at least in our own homes. And there are things like that that we can take into our own hands and that we can do to influence the shape of the future, that we are not just passive spectators. This is a full contact active sport that we are participating in, whether we like it or not. Yeah. So we better understand that and use that that realization to our advantage.
Well, your point is so well taken. It's along the same line, by the way, as one of my all-time favorite quotes. Something that mythological warrior John Connor, who says circa 2025, I believe, there is no fate but what you make. That was at the
end
of
one of those. We make for ourselves, I believe. Yeah, that's emblazoned in my mind as well. Talk about predictive programming from Hollywood.
Holy crap. Yeah, indeed. Well, there you have it, folks. James's bold predictions for 2018. James, thanks again for sharing that. We'll look forward to talking with you around this time next year to see just how ridiculous and unreliable your prognostications really were. I'm betting, though, there'll end up being a surreal mix of fantasy and reality in the outcomes.
Well, there's some truth in the humor anyway, I think.
Yeah, let's hope so. Now, or not, depending on the prediction.
Depending on the prediction.
Now, if why don't we turn our attention kind of toward your neck of the woods. James Reuters is reporting that National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster was in San Francisco last weekend for secret meetings about North Korea. Apparently he met with the director of the Japanese National Security Council along with some high-level South Korean officials. Now, the consensus of the group that's being reported is that resumed communications by the North Koreans with the South are simply diversions and won't have any effect on its determined pursuit of nuclear weapons. The group agreed that they need to put more unified pressure on the North. James, what are you hearing about this?
I haven't heard much beyond what you've reported there. Again, we are not privy to the backroom deliberations that are going on, and anything that comes out of those types of deliberations, I think, has to be at least we have to take a quizzical glance at, because we don't know. But I think it's self-evident that the North Koreans are not simply going to disarm, not just going to simply just give up their nuclear program for no reason whatsoever, especially in light of the lessons learned from Iraq. If you don't have weapons of mass destruction, they will come in for you. Or in Libya, if you have some sort of nuclear program and give it up, don't worry, they're coming for you in a few years once everything's out of the way. So yeah. I think they've learned those lessons, and that's why that is a non-starter in terms of a preface for any sort of negotiations.
Yeah, that's I don't know whether it's anything substantive is going to come out of it. I guess time will tell. Sounds like we're on the cusp of a break. Why don't we hear from here a couple of messages, and we'll be back with James Corbett.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value. value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. Day complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back to Financial Survival Radio. I'm Dave Allen here with our guest, James Corbett. James, before we go any further in the program, I've been meaning to ask you since last weekend, what were people, you and people in your part of the world, thinking about when they heard about the false alarm in Hawaii?
Well, as you can imagine, I think people in Japan are more concerned, or at least have reason to be even more concerned than the people in Hawaii, about the possibility of some sort of missile strike, because we have had missiles launched over our head several times here. So it is obviously an ongoing concern, and seeing images like what happened in Hawaii, I mean, it's horrific on any level. Even just the psychological trauma that's been caused to all those people, and, you know, you see the little children being shoved down manholes because people think they're, you know, they're all about to die. Those are the types of things that will stick with people for a very long time. And sadly, I mean, one way or another, whatever that event was, whatever caused that ultimately, I think that's part of the effect that it's going to have, is long-term scars on people's psyches. And those types of things, unfortunately, can play out in terms of, well, let's find a way to alleviate that stress. Oh, look, we can go in and militarily take care of the problem. I don't like the way this ratchets up the problem. And I think that's, again, whatever caused it, it's a worry and a concern for people, even here in Japan, perhaps even more so.
Yeah, we can only hope that new processes have been put into place, perhaps new technologies, if necessary, to ensure that something like that doesn't...
Right. Well, to be clear, me being the skeptical sort, I am somewhat skeptical of the official explanation that this was just a wrong button pushed during a shift changeover. It seems highly unlikely that would take place, and especially unlikely given that the exact same thing unfolded here in Japan just a few days after that.
Oh, it did. I didn't hear about that one.
Yes. In fact, in Japan just a few days ago, NHK, which is the public broadcaster here in Japan, issued an alert that North Korea had likely launched a missile and people should shelter in underground facilities, in subways or wherever. And that was retracted a few minutes later. Sorry, false alarm. But that was not the official government emergency alert. That was a NHK, the public broadcaster alert. So they went out to people who had that smartphone downloaded on their app.
We live in interesting times for sure. James, after your humorous tongue-in-cheek start to the new year, your article in this week's Corbett Report takes a slightly, if I may, darker turn. Entitled Four Privacies You Didn't Know You Lost, your essay starts off with this question. We all know that privacy is a thing of the past, right? Your introduction further suggests that even the normies no longer scoff at the conspiracy theorists who warn that every one of your electronic gadgets is listening to everyone you every one you say, and beaming that information off the third parties. Now they think that's just a good thing. Dude, you certainly seem to be channeling a little Kurt Vonnegut this week. I say that in the most complimentary of lights. You go on to write about the four privacies that have been obliterated in recent years: the privacy of garbage, location, thought, and transaction. James, do you mind taking us through each of these four privacies and tell us what we ought to know? Let's start with the privacy of garbage. And
well, before we get to that,
the time you need. Yeah, please.
Well, before we get to that, just to lay the groundwork for this, I have been covering this basically since the inception of the Corbett Report, the idea of privacy and the ways that people are being surveilled, often without their knowledge. And I've been talking about this long before Snowden and all of this became mainstream information. I talked about Kalia and the Stellar Wind and the programs like that that, again, most people probably still have never heard of, but are underlying the NSA surveillance. And I've talked about 30 ways you're being spied on. I had 20 more ways you're being spied on, talking about all the crazy things that most people, again, have no idea are taking place, including the CIA, then the head of the CIA, Petraeus, back several years ago, talking about, bragging about how the CIA is going to use smart appliances like your dishwasher to spy on you. Mm-hmm. They openly talk about this stuff. But again, it was laughed at and derided as conspiracy theory until all the Snowden talk suddenly bubbled up to the surface, and they had to admit that at least some of the spying that was going on, still, I think people don't really know how pervasive it all is. And those are just the privacies we know that we've lost. We know that they're listening in on phone calls and have copies of emails and things like this. But there's things that most people don't even think of when it comes to the realm of privacy. And the first one I start off in, somewhat of a more lighthearted note, but still, I think something to at least consider, is that your garbage tells an awful lot about you. If you really want to know how someone lives, what they purchase, where they go, who they interact with, there's a lot of clues that you can find in the garbage. And again, most people probably don't think about it. They just put their garbage out. But not only can the police or anyone else, any authority, in fact, anyone, it doesn't have to be any authority of any sort, go through your garbage, but they do. And I point to a 2002 article that was recently pointed out to me by a listener from the Willamette Week, which is a free publication in Portland, where they were talking about this crazy story about this police officer who was under investigation, so the fellow police officers were raiding her garbage, and it ended up going to court, and the prosecutor argued, no, you don't need any special permission to do this, it's your garbage, we can go through it. And it came out they've been doing this for decades and decades. So the Willamette Week actually went and raided the garbages of the prosecutor and the mayor and the other people, the sheriff, the people who were arguing for this. And strangely enough, they didn't enjoy that invasion of their privacy. Can you imagine? Just an example of the phenomenon, and that was from 2002. Can you imagine how much worse it's gotten? Well, actually, we don't have to imagine, because as I covered last year on my New World Next Week series with James Evan Pilato of MeanerMonarchy.com, they are, in fact, training garbage men to spy on customers in contracts that, of course, are being helped along by the federal government, including the police and the DHS, that are contracting garbage men to basically spy on you. This is not conspiracy theory. They're now out and admitting it. So, again, most people don't think when you toss something out in the garbage, it's gone. But it isn't really gone. And, in fact, there are people who are interested in that.
Is that show you mentioned, is that a YouTube show, or is that available on your website?
That is YouTube. It's on my website. It's available many different ways. It's called New World Next Week.
New World Next Week, and that's thecorbettreport.com.
That's right.
All right. How about the privacy of location?
So this is one that people probably do think a little bit more about, but they probably aren't aware of just how many different ways their location is being tracked at any given time. So, of course, this is in the era of the smartphone and people carrying these tracking devices around with them all the time. It's easier than ever to find out exactly where someone is, where they're moving, and from that, deriving a lot of information about their personal life. But again, most people don't understand that, in fact, increasingly different stores are using your cell phone to track your movement through the store so they can better understand your purchasing habits and where you went and where they should be placing this and that. And oh yeah, they're probably selling that data through the back door to companies like Axiom and others that you've never heard of that are collecting that sort of data on millions and millions of Americans, let alone people around the world, that they're compiling into psychographic profiles of you using thousands of different data points from all different places so they can find out more information about you. This information, in fact, even just a decade ago, it was discovered that universities, basically some university researchers in the UK, had been granted access to data from mobile phone, cell phone companies to give information on their customers as to their movements so that the researchers could then compile information about a human movement, basically how, you know, how far do people move every day and, you know, what kind of patterns develop and that sort of thing, all for, you know, university research. But when it came out, it was something of a scandal. People were saying, well, you know, I didn't grant you permission to be giving my location data to some researchers or whatever. I think it goes to show just how far we have devolved in the past decade, where that was a big scandal a decade ago when it came out. But now, I mean, would anyone even think twice about that? And then it gets even worse when you think about the facial recognition technology, which is increasingly being employed. In fact, there are now 117 million American faces in facial recognition databases of various sorts. And there is at least the possibility of connecting these facial recognition cameras into a connected network that could theoretically track you, you know, not anywhere you go in the entire country, but at least around the country. There is a network called Trapwire that was discovered several years ago that connects CCTV in places around the country and collects information about that, including trying to use pre-crime to predict when a crime is going to happen. There are microphones being embedded in street lamps and other places, in buses and things around town.
Wait a second. That was a movie, wasn't it?
Ha! Minority Report is probably what you're thinking about.
Yeah, I believe it is.
That was a particularly interesting piece of predictive programming from Hollywood that, in fact, most people don't know. In the production of that movie, they created something they called the Bible, the 2087 Bible, or whatever it was. Basically, they got together a bunch of leading technology experts and people involved in tech, basically asking what will things look like 50 years from now. And they created this entire, you know, roadmap for where these technologies are heading, and then they use that as the basis for the movie, which is why so many times you will hear Minority Report referenced as, well, they first talked about this in Minority Report, but now. Anyway, the punchline on this one is the BBC, the Big Brother Corporation, as I call it, was trying to test these facial recognition cameras that are being placed in China, where they now are implementing a database that they brag is going to be able to identify any one of their 1.3 billion citizens based on their photo ID within seconds. They were trying to test this, the power of this technology, so they put a BBC reporter out on the streets of Gaiyan in China, and how long will it take before the facial recognition cameras will spot me, identify me, flag me, and get me arrested by the police? It took 7 minutes. So,
good God.
This is the world that we're moving into, sleepwalking into.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. Now your next one struck me as probably the most scary for me anyway. That is the privacy of thought.
That's right. I do reserve skepticism for these stories because I think there's a lot of incentives for various different people to lie about them, both monetary incentives and also for we know that the crime lab, the FBI crime lab, has lied about the veracity of some of these technologies in the past, even fingerprint. People might think that fingerprint identification is ironclad, but in fact it's much more of a shaky science than they let on, let alone lie detectors and hair analysis and other things like this that they eventually realize or admit, it's not exactly 100%, and yeah, there's a lot of innocent people who went to jail. So I always take these stories with a grain of salt. But
sure,
there are stories of not just predictions about what future technology could do, but actual demonstrations of quote unquote thought reading computers and that, including computers that through fMRI. And again, I do hold skepticism about the limits and abilities of that technology, but they can take put subjects in front of a picture of a face, and then through the fMRI reconstruct that picture of that face from that data fairly reliably. And again, don't take my word for it. Look at the actual pictures themselves. There is something to it. And They're working on mind messaging technology. They have sent messages through brain, electrodes implanted in one person's brain to someone implanted in someone else's brain. They're looking into doing this in real time, translating thoughts into words. And they say commercially available mind reading technologies of various sorts are going to be just years away. So again, I do hold skepticism, but I think there's real progress being made on this front.
Jeez, you know, in that vein, James, I told tongue-in-cheek my co-host of our earlier afternoon show, Melody Cederstrom, we were talking about something similar to this, and, you know, it just struck me that, geez, in a couple of years, presidents and their cabinets and members of congressional leadership can sit at the table and argue about this, that, or the other thing, and you know, one congressional leader can say through these electrodes and just send a brain thought that you're an S-hole or this is an S-house or whatever, and not have to worry about saying anything or being misquoted or someone not hearing you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's taking it to probably a crazy extreme, but it strikes me as... That's scary. Well, in any event, the last of your losses involves the privacy of transaction.
And I try to make the point in the article just how foundational this privacy is. Again, something that we don't necessarily think about every day, but the amount of information that we're giving up in a lot of our transactions these days, especially as more and more people are switching to digital forms of payment, is really astounding. And the amount of information you can compile on someone's life just by tracking what it is they're buying and when and where is phenomenal. And on that note, of course, this is what frustrates me so much about the cryptocurrency debate that takes place these days, is that most people are talking about the implications of the, you know, having all transactions recorded in a blockchain for posterity that will always be trackable to your address, which again can be pseudonymous but is not necessarily anonymous. The whole point of all of this talk to me is the only question that matters is, can we make a quote-unquote pirate money that is actually anonymous and that cannot be tracked? That is the really, I think, the primary concern for the liberty movement, so-called, going forward. And the only thing that matters, and I don't think there's enough traction around that particular thing right now.
James, fascinating. It's been a lot of fun, insightful having you back on. Listeners, I hope you had as much fun as I did. We appreciate you taking time out of your busy day to be with us. We'll talk to you again in 2 weeks. Listeners, thanks for tuning in. I'll see you tomorrow with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival Radio. Actually, I won't. I'll see you Monday. Have a great weekend.